Live from downtown Calgary, this is Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
.803, Modest Mouse on your Friday. Long weekend ahead. Labor Day Classic just a few days away. What a gem it's going to be. Stampeders 7-1. Eskimos 7-1. Jerks. Stamps only 1-1 against the West. Big test here. They've got John Cornish back. And sounds like Mo Price probably ready to go. Good to see them healthy. Meanwhile, Mike Riley sounds like he will play for sure after a minor hand injury suffered last week. We'll have more on that Labor Day matchup with Gordon Norrie at about 20-9-ish. Big sale going on down at Stampederland.
New Jersey.
Buy the new gear. Sale today, apparently. So if he's not too busy working the register, he'll be kind enough to join us. Also, we'll hear from Rick Ball and Kelly Rudy, the new TV play-by-play team for the Calgary Flames regionally. And this is going to be a treat, an absolute pleasure to listen to these two gentlemen call games.
Dynamic duo. It's dynamite.
Well, and, you know, people are going to say nice things no matter what happens, but
sure.
Absolutely 100% truthfully, I admire both of these men immensely in terms of what they've accomplished in their careers as broadcasters, never mind elsewhere. And if you don't know, Rick Ball has done BC Lions games forever, started with the Kelowna Rockets, got into Canucks radio. When Jim Houston went, John Shorthouse moved up to TV, radio was vacant.
Well, I mean, you were in BC for a while, so I mean, you obviously have that connection there, right?
Well, and at night, even when I was living in the Okanagan, at night, AM waves travel for what seems like forever. You could get Calgary sports talk radio here, Sportsnet 960 The Fan. You could also pick up the broadcast out of Vancouver, so whoever was playing.
Match made in heaven.
Yeah. Now, Jay, have we got you over there? Our next guest just texted me. He said, I missed your call. Call me again. So there you are. We're going to be catching up with Ryan Jankowski, the head scout of Hockey Canada. Exactly what's going on in their universe right now. And what about this tournament? They just keep dominating. We'll talk with him about that. Also, we're collecting your texts all day. 960-960. I still have not got a sufficient suggestion of what the Toronto Blue Jays should give Derek Jeter. He's a tough guy to buy gifts for. You know that one person in your family impossible to buy gifts for? Derek Jeter's that guy. Because he's got all the women in the world, he's got all the money in the world, he's got all the toys in the world, and cars, luxury yacht. What do you get Derek Jeter?
I still think Eugenie Bouchard's the best.
I don't think so at all. I'm not entrusting Derek Jeter with our national prize. We are pleased to be joined on the Subway Restaurant's Fresh Take Hotline by Ryan Jankowski, the head scout for Hockey Canada. Morning, Ryan. Hello. We can't hear him. He's probably there somewhere. Oh, we got you now. Ryan, how are you?
Good morning. How are you guys?
I'm great. Sorry about that.
No worries.
We had you muted. It's a very difficult conversation when one of the two parties is muted.
People have said I sound better that way.
Well, first off, tell us about your summer. Did you finally squeeze some vacation in? Because I know you were over in Czech Republic in Slovakia for the Ivan Hlinka a few weeks ago.
Yes. Been able to squeeze a little bit of that in after a very busy 3 weeks for us, but it was a great 3 weeks, and to cap it off with the Ivan Hlinka championship, it was excellent. And what a great team it was, and what a great group of players. They really came together and played well, and it was real exciting for us.
Tell us about the tournament. What are the restrictions age-wise, and who typically shows up from in terms of nations, and what players represent that nation?
Yeah, we this year, it's an under-18 tournament, typically 17-year-olds and typically players heading into their draft year. So this year it was the 1997 borns. You can bring underagers. There are underagers for other teams, but Canada has always stuck to just having the of-age players. We were in a pool with Slovakia, Switzerland, and Sweden, and we went 3-0 in that pool, and then we crossed over against the United States in the semifinal, and then played the Czech Republic in the final. The only team that doesn't bring its best players to this event is the United States. They bring typically a B team to this tournament. Their national development team program does not come to this tournament. So that would be the only team that we didn't see their best players.
And the results were stunning, frankly. What was your closest game, like 6-2 or something like that, once you got out of the exhibition?
We won our three round robin games 5-1, and then we won 11-5 and 6-2, and that's a testament to the group of players that we have in this age group, especially the forwards who were just sensational. Scored a lot of goals, obviously, but also we got to give a lot of credit to our coaching staff, and they shushed it off after the final game. Saying, hey, all we had to do was open the door. But when you have that type of talent and that type of egos with the players coming from their club teams, the coaches did an amazing job of preaching a team system and playing as a team and being as a team right from day one. And I've never seen really a team this close before. And just the confidence that they had that they were going to win every game. And not just win every game, but have no problems in those games. And there were a few times where it did get tight. The Sweden game wasn't really a 5-1 game. It was more of a 3-1 hockey game. We took over in the third period. And even a couple times in the 11-5 U.S. game, it was tight late in the first period. It was a 1-1 hockey game. And then we started to pull away. But that was the confidence our players had. But it was also the confidence that our coaches had in the players that was instilled right from day one in Calgary.
You've absolutely dominated this tournament. Canada's won the last seven Hlinka tournaments, 31 of 33 games over that span. And dating back to 1991, the Canadians have won 19 of 24. Why success here? And why have we seen struggles at the under 20s with theoretically the same guys 2 years later in terms of the golds versus, you know, just outright domination in this tournament? And the other one's been a bit of a drought.
Well, we spent a lot of time talking about that and looking at those issues, and we think there's a number of things there. So now with our World Junior team this year, we've got the 95-borns. Those 95s are comprised of the players who played at the Ivan Hlinka 2 years ago. And at that Ivan Hlinka, the first line on that team was Curtis Lazar, Jonathan Drouin, and Nathan McKinnon. So really all three of those guys could be in the NHL this year amongst others. So we definitely have that, that plays a factor. The other thing at the World Juniors is that you're mixing two age groups, and this is as much as Canada has a lot of depth, and that helps us, in the 1 year tournament, such as this one, when you start mixing the 2 years, the other countries can put pretty good lineups together. And our lineup doesn't really look that much different because our top four lines from 1 year to the next year are very similar. We can put a lot of players on the ice. However, those other countries, when they get to mix those 2 years of players, it really adds to their depth and adds to their ability of players that they can put in the lineup.
It's a good point. And I like what you mentioned about Lazar, McKinnon, and Drouin, because if all those guys are eligible and all three are in the NHL, you're right. That's a significant blow to Team Canada, whereas at this tournament you just came back from, they all were there. Tell me a bit about how you sort of might have philosophically changed at Hockey Canada in the last decade. It seems like we're seeing less third and fourth lines and more line 1A, 1B, 1C, 1D at these international events.
Well, and that was the beauty of this team and even our under-18 team last April with our World Championship bronze medal. We're putting our teams together and looking at the best players and the best players now being put into certain roles on that team. And with this team, we had really at the end of the day, three lines that could do anything at any given time. Our first line was our third line. Our third line was our first line. And yet that fourth line of Tyler Soy, Mitchell Stevens, and Adam Musil, at one point during the tournament, I don't know if it was going into the U.S. game, Mitchell Stevens and Tyler Soy were our leading scorers. And that was our quote-unquote fourth line. But they were also really good on the penalty kill. They were an excellent energy line for us. And at one point, we've got players like Matt Purcell and Travis Konecny and Mitchell Marner, who everybody's going to hear about throughout this year because they're going into their NHL draft year and how good of players these guys are. These guys that were on our quasi-fourth line were our leading scorers. So it just goes to show we brought skill with that line as well. Maybe a little bit more of a dimension of penalty kill and some size with a guy like Adam Musil. But at any point, any one of those lines could go on the ice and play against any one of the other team's lines. And we've got to look at that more so at the World Juniors, of just taking the best players and having them be put in certain roles by the coach, and the coach working with those lines so that we wear down opponents. And in that Sweden game, it was a 3-1 game. It was a tight hockey game. The Swedes played us very, very well. But when we got into the third period and we kept cycling the puck and handling the puck, and everybody talks about analytics and Corsi and things like that, but we saw it at this tournament that when you have the puck, it's very, very tough to defend. And especially on the big ice, when you can cycle and you can skate and you can make plays, you wear down the opponent. You basically just tire them out. And the Swedes gave us a really, really difficult performance that game. And yet at the end of the day, we just felt that our depth, our four lines, really just won out for us.
You mentioned the upcoming draft class. Everyone, I imagine, that's listening to this radio station, that reads the sports section, that watches highlights at the end of their day, have heard of Jack Eichel and Connor McDavid. What can you tell us about some of the other guys? Because you probably would have seen them at this tournament, and maybe they even played big roles on your team.
Well, there's a number of different guys, and they're all different. I'll start with Mitchell Marner. Mitch Marner is tremendously skilled. He's as skilled a player that I've seen come through the Canadian program in a number of years. His game really reminds me of Jonathan Drouin's, and yet every time I watch him, I think of Patrick Kane. Obviously, very lofty expectations when you throw those names around, but the skill and the plays this kid makes. He's 5'11", probably about 155, 160 pounds right now. But his skill and his ability to make plays and his one-on-one, we joked that we had the Mitchell Marner power play. All he would do was skate around the offensive zone, beating guys one-on-one until he was able to either find a shot or find a guy back door and slide a pass over. So he's a tremendous player. Lawson Kraus, just a tremendous character kid, 6'3", does everything. And he's your power forward. He's your typical power forward. And he's going to get a lot of play this year just because of the game that he plays. He's a strong, hard-nosed player that goes to the dirty areas. So he's a player that NHL teams and fans are going to like. Travis Konecny was our captain. He played with us in April with the under-18 bronze medal winning team. He's got high speed, and he hits like a bullet. And for a smaller guy at 5'9", 5'10", he's a guy that's very exciting in the game. And Western fans will know Matthew Barzell, who plays for the Seattle Thunderbirds. He's a high talent, tremendous skill, tremendous speed. And I talk about all these guys, and that's one thing that comes out is skill and speed. And we've talked in the past of, does Canada produce enough skill? Well, we're seeing it with these age groups right now. We wish we had a few more of them so that when we do go to the World Juniors and we lose some of these guys to the NHL, that we'd have some more. But we do have some high-end skilled players in the country that are going to make this draft real exciting for people with those names.
Well, that is exciting, and we've heard so much about Eichel and McDavid. It's nice to expand the conversation, and it sounds like our country's in great hands in terms of creating high-skilled players, not just the big galoots that we were probably known for in the 70s and 80s. Ryan, thanks for your time. All the best in this coming season. We know we've got a World Juniors in our nation, Montreal, Toronto. There won't be a bigger spotlight on this tournament maybe ever again, so we'll catch up soon, I'm sure.
Sounds good, Ryan. Excited about it. Thank you very much.
All right. That's Ryan Jankowski, head scout for Hockey Canada. We will break when we return. Rick Ball, Kelly Rudy, your new television broadcast team for the Flames. We'll ask them about each other. What should we expect, and how excited are you? It is Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Proudly broadcasting from downtown Calgary, Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Big news yesterday in the Flames universe as it was officially made public, the brand new broadcast teams for both radio and television. An absolute pleasure to be joined on the phone line by the new play-by-play and color commentator tandem for television, Rick Ball and Kelly Rudy. Morning, boys.
Morning, Ryan.
First off, we'll start with Kelly. This is exciting news. How fired up are you for covering the Flames on a full-time basis?
Well, I'm super excited. Everybody knows that I live here, and for most of the time that I've lived here, I've been a season seat holder. I wasn't last year, and I doubt I will be this year simply because I'm going to be so busy. But I have followed this team so closely, and I just thought it was not only fun to be a season seat holder, but almost like a duty because as a former player, I really appreciated people in New York, L.A., and San Jose that had become season seat holders, and for that reason, I wanted to follow suit. But it's just been a really fun journey to go from what was a fantastic ride at Hockey Night in Canada now to coming to Rogers Sportsnet and being a part of their team is super thrilling.
Rick, you're a well-known name in British Columbia. Welcome to Alberta. How are you?
I'm well, and I'm excited, too. I mean, you know, there's so many great things about this opportunity that made it pretty difficult to say no to. I mean, obviously, the chance to join Rogers, they've got the hockey rights in Canada for the next 12 years. It's going to be an incredible ride. The other aspect of it that was really appealing to me was a chance to work with Kelly at least 60 times a year. We had a chance the last couple of years to do games together on Hockey Night in Canada, and you know, and our professional relationship goes back probably 10 years, Kelly, when you think about it. He used to be a regular when I was doing a sports show in Vancouver. In fact, came out one week and co-hosted the show with me, and we really hit it off. So when we stepped into the broadcast booth together, it was a seamless transition, and I can't wait to get to work with him again in the booth doing Calgary Flames games.
What do you like about working with Kelly, Rick?
Well, you know, he's an insufferable jerk most of the time, but
oh, I don't know about that.
I'm kidding, obviously. I always say to people, Kelly, exactly how he is on television, that's how he is in off television. He is what you see is what you get. He's an honest guy, a straight shooter, just an easy guy to get along with. You know, there's that part of it. Then obviously, just on hockey terms, he played so long in the National Hockey League. He's got such a great, vast knowledge of, you know, what's going on, why it's going on. He's experienced just about everything in his career, and he can relate that to the viewer through, you know, what's happening on the ice, because he's lived much of that in his own career. So, you know, there's a lot of reasons that I love working with Kelly, and not the least of which is he's just a great guy, and I think anybody who's ever seen him on television gets that impression, because that's exactly how he is off the air.
Kelly, tell us about your early interactions with Mr. Ball, who is becoming more and more familiar in these parts. But again, as mentioned, you went out and worked with him for a week in Vancouver a while ago.
I did, and that told me right off the get-go that I hated morning radio. That's one thing that I remember, because I would get picked up at the hotel at 4 a.m., and that just doesn't suit my lifestyle. But anyways, what really struck me about Rick was how professional he was. So he has a real great sense of humor. Calgary Flames fans will get to see that over the course of the next few seasons. But yet he knows when to sprinkle that in, because that's a very hard job to do. He's a really good, hardworking broadcaster that takes the time to prepare properly. And when you work along somebody like that, it's really evident, and you know it early. And so that really struck me that, boy, I knew this guy was going to be a really good broadcaster. And like Rick said, that was really one of the reasons why this opportunity was so appealing, too, because he and I are becoming really good friends, and I look to build that friendship also, not only because it's going to be great for covering hockey, but I just like Rick a lot.
We are joined by Sportsnet Flames television broadcast team, the new duo, Rick Ball on play-by-play and Kelly Rudy, the color commentator. Rick, you're awfully familiar with the BC Lions. You've done a lot of football, but recently you've got back into hockey, doing some Canucks games on radio, the Hockey Night in Canada, and that was a bit of a return to your roots. I think many people forgot you were a WHL broadcaster for some time. Maybe walk us through your career a bit.
Yeah, I mean, everybody started, you know, when I first started doing hockey at the National Hockey League level, and, you know, that was actually the first time I did it was in 2000, 2001. I had a chance to do some games on television back then. But, you know, then I was doing football mostly, and people said, oh, he's a football guy. But really, my roots are hockey. I was the first ever play-by-play guy for the Kelowna Rockets when they moved to Kelowna in 1995. I did that for 5 years. So, you know, that was a great experience. I mean, I rode the buses and did the whole junior hockey routine and, you know, had a great time doing that and really cut my teeth at that level. So, you know, it's still great today. I mean, there's fewer and fewer players that I covered in that league still playing in the NHL, but there are some, and it's always fun when, you know, you bump into some of the guys you got to see at the Western Hockey League level this many years later, still playing at the National Hockey League level. So it really was a great experience. And
and a great introduction in sort of the culture of hockey at that level. And it isn't that much different at the NHL level. I always say to people, you know, they're older, there's more money involved, but you know, sort of a lot of the same dynamics are at work, you know, when you're covering professional hockey that I used to see covering the Western Hockey League. So that was my first sport doing play-by-play, and I've been doing it now at the NHL level for the last 6 years, my last three doing Hockey Day in Canada. So I've called a ton of hockey games. I've called a whole bunch of Calgary Flames games, too, and you know, have a pretty good feel for that team as well, having watched them for the last 6 years, you know, doing games on radio and the last three on Hockey Day in Canada.
I know, I'm putting you on the spot. Were you there for the infamous tunnel meetup between Bob Hartley and John Tortorella or not?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Kelly and I did that game together.
Wow.
That was a rodeo. It was.
Didn't I say something like Tortorella's got to settle down here?
He's got to calm down, I thought, which was the understatement of the century. Well, the best part about that, I mean, it was exciting and, you know, some might say for all the wrong reasons, but as soon as we get the starting lineups handed to us about 2 minutes before the opening faceoff and in the broadcast booth, and they come in and they hand it to us, and Kelly and I look at the sheet and we both look at each other, we go, uh-oh. And sure enough, it went down exactly like we thought it was going to. But the most interesting part about Tortorella trying to storm the room is we'd almost thrown to commercial break, Kelly, at that time. And had we done that, that whole thing might have been missed and just lived on in legend. But right before, you know, we're sort of signing off and throwing to the break before we go back to the studio. Actually, the panel was on location that night, so it would have been Elliot and the guys in Vancouver. But our producer, Tim Davis, is in our ear going, John Tortorella is trying to get into the Calgary locker room. And so if you listen to the broadcast, it took us a second or two to catch our bearings because we could not believe what we were seeing. And I don't think many other people could either.
Kelly, what do you remember about that night?
I remember, first of all, that got me super charged up because I don't want to see that kind of hockey every single night, but I certainly don't mind it and I don't shy away from that kind of game. So that got me really excited. I was really into the game for the longest time. I didn't know what to expect for the second period, but to Rick's point about that camera and just the stroke of luck that we got in having that, that camera, by the way, is not recorded. So had we not stayed live with that shot, there's no way we could have found it and gone back and showed that incident afterwards. So we got lucky, like Rick said, with Tim Davis, the producer, and Ron Forsythe, the director, staying in the moment at the right time and catching that. Otherwise, the entire hockey world would not have been aware exactly what had happened. Of course, they would have heard about it, but not been shown the pictures. So that was a remarkable experience to be a part of.
Rick, would it be overstating it to say John Tortorella might have a job if you guys went to commercial break still?
Well, I'm sure somebody would have said something, but you know, I think ultimately, I mean, that didn't help his cause in Vancouver, but ultimately the lack of results were his undoing. And you know, that whether it was coincidence or not, that that really started a tailspin for the Canucks, much the same way that the Flames seemed to rally after that incident and play much better down the stretch. The Canucks went exactly the opposite direction. So I'm not sure that that incident not happening or not being on television would have saved John Tortorella's job.
Yeah, well, he got $6 million for 1 year of work. It's nice if you can do it. Usually that's reserved for 40-goal scorers. Kelly, tell us a bit about the Flames' offseason, what you made of some of the changes. They've now got Lance Bolma pen to paper. They add Devin Setoguchi. It seems to me as if maybe there's a tryout here or there, but this is the group they're going to roll with in October, is it not?
Absolutely. And, you know, when you get a guy like Setoguchi that's motivated, that can be pretty promising. We don't know exactly if he can get his career back on track, but at one time he is an awfully good hockey player. So I think that's a real good risk to take. I've liked the team. I think everybody knows from listening to me the last year how much respect I have for their work ethic and so on. They still have to build some talent and so on, but I kind of liken watching this team to my experience in my last 2 years in San Jose, where it was a young team. They were growing, trying to grow with those guys, sprinkle in some veterans to show them the way. But what's exciting for me as an analyst now is we get to watch these guys grow. And you can just see that when they start to get a little bit more experience, how that confidence grows. And then they start to make plays that they were afraid to make before that. So over the course of the next few years, we'll see that. And I go back to San Jose, where I started off with young guys like Jeff Friesen, Patrick Marleau, Marco Sturm, Andre Zuzan, Victor Kozlov, Andre Nazarov, all these great young players that end up having terrific careers. So hopefully that happens to these young guys on the Flames.
Rick, what's your eye on in terms of a storyline heading into training camp or even into the season with this Calgary club?
Well, I'm just going to reiterate what Kelly said in terms of the work ethic of the Calgary Flames. I've done a lot of Calgary games over the last couple of years, and you know, even though they might not have been there in terms of talent yet, and that's still a work in progress, their work ethic is unquestionable. And my feeling is that if you can start with that foundation, then it's a lot easier to rebuild than it is if you're trying to change the culture. I know I said this to Randy Sportak last night too, I think it was in the paper, but you know, when you're trying to change the culture and improve the talent at the same time, that to me is a major hurdle to get over. If you've got the team playing hard almost every night, and my impression of doing Calgary games is that's the way they play, then you're miles ahead. And now you just start to have to, you know, improve your talent and draft well and make some savvy moves on the free agent market and trading. And a turnaround can happen fairly quickly. So to me, that should have Calgary fans excited. How soon it happens, I'm not sure. But I just think the foundation of the way they play is a great start. And right now, that's pretty good.
Rick, when do you get to Calgary, and how's this all shaking down time-wise as you get set for the regular season?
Yeah, as soon as possible. Actually, I'm going to be out there this weekend with my family, figure out a place to stay in the short term, and then something more permanent as things go on, because it's all happened in it's fairly tight to the season. So there's a pile of logistical issues that have to be sorted out in the next couple of weeks, but I'll be there for training camp and for preseason, and looking forward to start calling Calgary games. I think our first game will be that Kraft Hockeyville game, so that's just around the corner, believe it or not.
And Kelly, tell us about the golf tournament you hold up annually in the Columbia Valley out in Invermere, Windermere area. I believe that went down earlier this month. Yeah. How was it?
Awesome. That was our third year, and it was just a huge success based upon the organizers. I'm lucky. I just basically show up and schmooze with everybody and ensure that everybody has a great time, and the golfing's terrific. And Brian Schall out at Copper Point knocks it out of the park every year. We raise monies for the Alberta Adolescent Recovery Center, which many Calgarians are familiar with, and it just does an amazing job of saving kids' lives that are in a really dangerous place, and also for the Summit Youth Center and a hockey program at the J.A. Laird School in Invermere. So all in all, it's a great success. I hope to continue to grow the tournament, and hopefully many more Calgarians will join us over the years.
It's a great cause, Kelly. I had some buddies in high school area that were saved by ARC, and it's great work you do in the community. Thanks for joining us, boys. We're really looking forward to, never mind training camp and preseason, the real stuff when we get to see you guys on TV and the 2014-15 Calgary Flames.
Thank you. Much appreciated, Ryan. We'll see you soon, bud.
Thanks, Rick.
Thanks, Ryan. See you, Kelly.
All right. Yeah, that is Rick Ball, the new play-by-play voice of the Flames on television, and Kelly Rudy, your new color commentator, as those national TV rights come over to Rogers. Of course, there's still the regional Flames games. You're going to see a whole lot of Flames on TV, all of it on Rogers-owned entities. The regional Flames duo right there on television. I cannot wait. Two immensely talented gentlemen. And boy, you're talking about two guys that have worked on the national level for the last little while that are going to regionally be working on just the Flames. It's going to be an absolute treat. We'll break. We come back. We'll change the conversation. We move from the Calgary Flames to your other home team, the Stampeders, just a few days away from the biggest game of the season and what some are calling the biggest Labor Day game ever. Is that too much hype? We'll find out next with the Stamps president, Gordon Norrie, on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Follow the show on Twitter at Boomer and Rhett. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
It is 8:42 on your Friday, a long weekend ahead, the Labor Day long weekend, and that means one thing in this fair city. It means the biggest regular season football game of the year. Joining us on the Subway Restaurant's Fresh Take Hotline to speak of that game, it's the president of the Stamps, Gordon Norrie. Morning, Gordon.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm pretty darn fine. I hear there's a bit of a ruckus down in Stampederland with a bit of a release party of sorts for the new jersey. Is that right?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I just walked back from the ticket office. There's a bunch of our wonderful fans lined up to be the first to purchase the new third jersey on a beautiful couple of days before game day here.
Now, what's the buzz been like? Because we've talked to the players. They're completely over the moon, and I don't know that standard fans will be able to see the jersey till Monday, but you're telling me fans this morning can go to your merchandise store and pick it up?
Absolutely. As of 8:30 this morning, the stamp store opened wide, and the new jerseys will be unveiled, and they're up for sale. So if you're interested in getting one before game day, today and tomorrow would be your opportunity.
Well, we've seen the helmet, and it's pretty darn cool. The guys like the chrome. It's kind of got the Christmas ornament red on the back, the matte black on the front, no shine at all. Pretty neat looking lid. What about the jersey? What can you tell us, or at least if you can't tell us what it looks like, what's the response been?
Well, the response has been overwhelming when I saw the looks on the faces of the first fans that walked in there. The helmets, I will assure everyone, the helmets and the jersey match, and you'd have to come down here and really see them for yourself to appreciate the full impact and the full creativity of the new third jersey.
How's the build-up for Labor Day going? How busy are things in terms of ticket sales and all the other game day things that you get ready for Monday?
Well, there's no doubt we're going to have a sellout for Monday. That said, there are still a few really good seats left. So the ticket office is open today, tomorrow, and you certainly can buy them online through Ticketmaster. So, well, like I said, we will sell out. So if fans need to get down here and see the game, they within the next couple hours would be the best opportunity to make sure they get a decent seat.
Now, tell me, you've been around this league and this team for some time. How does this stack up to prior Labor Days? There's always hype, but I can never remember so many people calling it the biggest Labor Day game ever, or even just suggesting that there's been two teams at 7-1 that have met. This is pretty special.
Absolutely. I think the fact that the teams are both 7-1 has really enhanced the Calgary-Edmonton rivalry, which has been healthy and in existence for the last several years. I mean, it wasn't a horrible game last year in terms of season, or in terms of attendance. We were almost 32,000. So, but clearly, with the competitive level of both of these teams and their 7-1 record, like I said, we'll sell out. So we'll be, you know, in and around the 36,000 mark for this Monday. So the competitive nature of the teams clearly does make a difference as well.
No question, and it's coming off just an absolute doozy of a game in Edmonton. A month and change ago? What did you remember about that first Calgary-Edmonton game?
Well, I remember that both teams looked really good on the offense and on the defense, and you know, they're going to play each other tough not only this Monday, but again for the rematch a week from this Saturday. So it'll be good.
It's funny, we've had a few guys in studio this week. It's been nice for us. We've moved downtown. We're right next to the City TV studios, so when guys are coming on Breakfast Television, we grab them. They hop in the studio, and we're continuing to hear fantastic stories about your players getting behind fantastic charitable causes, starting their own charitable cause, just really overall being immensely involved in the community. Are we hearing about it more, or are you seeing it more from your players?
I think we're seeing it more, and you're also obviously, with it happening more, you're obviously hearing about it more. These players never cease to amaze me in terms of how they engage. And engage, you know, fully. They're not forced into it. It's an option for them. But if you mention charities, the community, kids, I mean, these guys are all over it. And if you saw what happened here yesterday with the Kids Cancer Foundation and Jabari Arthur and his teammates fully embracing that charity, you'd have been overwhelmed. It almost brings tears to your eyes in terms of, you know, how sincere they really are in helping institutions like the Kids Cancer as an example out. Great company, great cause. And I can't, like I said, I can't say enough about the players in terms of not only their engagement in charities, but their enthusiasm to do so.
Yeah, we had Jabari in studio yesterday, and I imagine the gold shoelaces are what to watch for come Monday, right?
You won't see gold shoelaces on the field, but Jabari will be wearing gold shoelaces all month when he's off the field, doing his regular off-game, off-duty performances.
Okay, so tell us about your Labor Day memories. Is this something that's always been a big event for you? Do you have traditions to share? It's kind of a theme that we've had all week, asking people about what Labor Day means to them. Is it tailgating? Is it a certain relative that comes to town? Is it your buddies from Edmonton that come down QE2? What stands out for you about Labor Day?
Yeah, well, I've been a fan of the Stamps since I was about 13 years old when I first moved to the city. Labor Day always stands out. I also did a four-year tour as an Edmontonian in my previous life. So, yeah, the rivalry certainly is ramped up from my pals from the Edmonton marketplace. But my fondest memories are, you know, clearly the sellout, the fact that tailgating is clearly the best tailgating day, but also the fact that we have the military flyby. It's been a military-themed event now Support Our Troop event for several years now. And of course, I always think of Labor Day in conjunction with the Jets that fly over and do their salute to the military and to the crowd.
So what do we have? What do we have for the Jets? Can you tell us about it, or is this under wraps, top secret military mission until Monday afternoon?
No, this we were getting one of the jets. We've got one jet so far that will do a flyby on Monday. As you can appreciate, the Canadian military is engaged elsewhere in the world doing great things in peacekeeping spectrum. So we have only one at this point in time.
Well, that's
one is better than nothing, and one will make a massive impact, I'll guarantee you.
No question. I was going to say, if you have more than one, you risk having half your audience leave deaf. They are unbelievably loud, and it's a fantastic way to kick off a Monday. Gord, we wish you all the best with the new jerseys. Everyone sounds really excited that's seen them, and we can't wait until Monday. We hope to see you at the park there.
I appreciate your support, and thanks for the time.
All right, that's Gordon Norrie, the president of your Calgary Stampeders. Monday, the Labor Day Classic, 7-1 Edmonton, 7-1 Calgary. Cannot wait. Smitty, Labor Day, what does it mean to you?
You know what, that to me sums up the CFL. One game of the year, outside of the Grey Cup, obviously, Labor Day Classic, the game of the year to get to. You know what I mean? Like, every year, if I can't make out most games, I try to make an effort to get to that one.
Yeah. Any particular memory stand out, or is it just that? Just that it seems to
just
always be
there.
Labor Day when you're at the game,
yeah.
And the atmosphere.
It's got a different feel for sure, hey? Like, when you're there, you know.
It's a big, big game. It really is. And I love the fact that those two teams don't like each other to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
Never mind this year. It seems exceptional because we've had, you know, Jones used to work for Hufnagel, right. No handshake. You've got the guys posing with his motorcycle after the
couple
win.
Storylines involved.
There's all that spiced it up this year, not to mention the 7-1 marks. But really, you've got your biggest rival, a huge game on a holiday. Everyone's having a long weekend good time. And on top of that, they got to go bang heads into each other four or 5 days later up in Edmonton.
Ain't done then, hey.
And it just feels like, it almost feels like a playoff series. You know what I mean? And you don't get those in football, but you know when a series happens when it's okay. You get us tonight, but we'll get you tomorrow, right?
Little two-game miniseries, yeah.
Yeah, and I think the shape of the West will be very interesting to see coming out of these two Labor Days because, of course, you've also got Saskatchewan, Winnipeg.
Mm-hmm.
They go the back-to-back as well. And I really wonder what the West is going to look like. BC's got a buy-in, and they'll obviously play an East team. So what's the West going to look like at the end of all this? I'm intrigued, and certainly there'll be 36,000 or so really cheering on a team with what I'm imagining are some pretty sexy new third jerseys. I think there's going to be a lot of black in them.
I've seen some pictures already on Facebook and Twitter. They're starting to kind of pour on. A lot of these guys are starting to model these jerseys, and they look nice. They look slick. Have you not seen any of these yet?
Pardon me?
I've not seen any of these jerseys.
They've shown some teasers. I've not seen the whole lot. We're going to hunt on Twitter. We'll retweet some stuff. And we've got also Andrew Schultz will join us after 9 o'clock. We'll hear from Stephen Brunt as well. We'll get the Hamilton-Toronto Labor Day Classic story as well.
Schultz is actually one of these guys I saw posting a picture with him donning the new...
Is he got one on?
He's got one.
Is he going to wear it in after 9 o'clock?
He might wear one in. Let me tell you, they look good. A couple pistols somewhere. On
really?
And they.
Oh, wow. This will be interesting. All right. Also, before 10 o'clock, we have obviously the staple. What you want to talk about. And we may even have time for one more in case you missed it. In fact, you should probably do that right about meow. In case you missed it, it is Boomer gone on a Friday, but he's been here all week. And yes, a long weekend ahead. Time for us to look back at the best and the worst of Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and maybe a little today. It is in case you missed it.
Time for me to take a look in the mirror, talking about eating right and doing some things. I went golfing in kind of a charity thing on Saturday. Rode in carts and not walking. Carts, 18 holes, 120 or 30 swings, ooh, strokes. Oh, that's my game. Sunday morning, 8 o'clock, on the ice with the youngsters from about 8 till 12, 12:30. I feel like I got run over by a car. My feet, my legs, my back.
How are your calves?
My neck, like into my shoulder, my entire back, like top, the whole thing. Anything that if it's the muscles between your ribs, they're sore.
It hurts your body you didn't know you had.
Hurts to sneeze. And I didn't do anything. I stood on the ice for a few hours and swung a golf club. You're going on breakfast television just after 8 o'clock. I'll be driving the bus.
All right.
While you get your pretty unshaven face on the tube. Have you done a lot of television work? Are you familiar with how it works?
A little, not a ton. I used to work on the show here.
I would say what you do, don't move too much. In fact, the less you move, the better.
I'm pretty fidgety to begin with.
Yeah, just get like really like stone. Like, yeah, sit straight up. Don't move your head, like move your entire upper body. So everything's stiff, like a statue.
Like there's a rod going from your head
straight through
to your buttocks.
So just kind of...
That looks very awkward.
Speak more in a monotone. Practice your monotone. And when you look into the camera, don't look at Tara. Make no eye contact with her.
Well, she's talking to me. What do you mean I don't look at
her?
Well,
just ignore her.
Really?
Just listen.
She's not going to be offended.
Keep stiff as a board, thick neck, and look deep down the lens with a cold death stare.
Really?
Yeah. In the monotone voice.
I'm starting to get nervous.
You want to practice one more time?
Devin Setoguchi is the newest member of the club, signing a one-year contract worth $750,000. We've got him on the phone line.
You know, they give me a chance this year to come in and try to re-spark. Mm-hmm.
You're coming to an organization that, I mean, last year they admitted they were going through a rebuild.
I think that was the perfect fit for me.
Eugenie's kind of got the mixed bag thing going on. Gone on the skid since losing in the Wimbledon final. She's on the cover of the New York Times magazine. As we heard Damian Cox tell us yesterday with Rob Kerr. Great article if you've got time to read it.
I'm really
very, very early in her career. There's
really
a lot of pressure. Boom. She's not the unknown underdog anymore. There's expectations to win.
Not sure I'll have time.
She's got to the semis in all three majors.
Got a lot on the go.
But then since Wimbledon final, she loses there.
Yeah.
First round out in Montreal, her first match, I should
Damian
say.
Damian Cox, you said?
First match with the Cincinnati out. Second round, Connecticut Open out. So she lost four of her last five going in.
Well, I'll probably just take your word on it.
This has been Boomer Hates Sports, only on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
You're not going to get behind Eugenie.
I just feel that's unfair.
What do you mean? You're not getting behind a Canadian superstar.
Well, that's good. Every year, I try and take time off at this time of year to go to Flushing Meadows and watch the U.S. Open.
Yeah.
And Kirsch says, no, it's the start of hockey season. You can't leave. What are you kidding? Camps around the corner. Rookies are going to be reporting. You can't be going to Flushing Meadows to be watching your tennis.
Joe, can we get you to voice?
Sure! Home Hardware!
Top prospect!
Wayne Simmons of the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds! One of the top prospects! Home Hardware! Post the hall! Holy Mackinac!
Again, Joe.
Give me a hot level on the mic,
yeah,
Joe.
Kind
just
of,
tone it down.
Just a little hot.
So why Michael Ferland? Who else in the organization is over 215 pounds, can fight, scrap like crazy, and could probably get you 25 tucks? I don't think there's a single human.
I'm sorry, what?
He could score 25 goals. That's what the kids call it. If you ask Ferland, he would say tucks.
Why would you do that to yourself?
To aggravate you. That's all.
25 tucks.
That's what they, have you talked to a hockey player recently?
Yeah, I have.
They use that terminology. Is a snipe
do they really?
Well? They do. Yeah.
Do they?
I did not pick that up outside the arena. It was inside the arena.
So if somebody had four tucks, would they win four rips?
LMAO. Raffle-a-mayo.
LMAO.
Raffle-a-mayo. LOL.
Why don't you talk about what we want to talk about? Maybe give it a try.
You know what? Take your cell phone and fire it out your window and pull over to the side of the road because it's just too much for you right now.